Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The Ad News Pubcast, the podcast that celebrates the industry's penchant for a sociable drop and a chat.
Hello and welcome to Ad News Pubcast. Journalist Arvind Hickman here, and today I'm joined by Ad News editor Rosie Baker, Group M CEO Mark Lolbach, and Mindshare boss Katie Rigg-Smith. Today we're going to take a look at media pitches and etiquette, the power of procurement. We'll also discuss client behaviour and how this impacts upon agencies. We'll move on to diversity and we'll ask our guests their views about the big media issue for 2017. But to begin with, and Mark, until recently you were the CMO of McDonald's. I just wanted to ask you, what is your McDonald's meal of choice?
All the burning questions to start with.
It's a really good question. Probably one of my favourite burgers is the fillet of fish.
Okay. What about you, Katie?
I'm celiac, so I can't have any of it.
Oh, that's no good. See, my classic go-to is a Happy Meal with an extra burger.
And an extra toy.
Yeah. And an extra toy, of course.
It's all about the toy.
It's all about the toy.
Okay. I'm a Big Mac man myself. But let's start off with pitches. Now, when we were in the lobby, Katie, you were saying that the pitching season seems to be relentless and never-ending. Have you noticed this increasing in frequency or decreasing in frequency?
It's certainly been a rather unprecedented 12 months, I think, in the industry. And I guess what we were talking about in the lobby was that a lot of people have started to guess that maybe it'll come off at the end of the year, or I still think the pitching will be pretty prolific until well into next year. So,
what about you, Mark? Coming from a client perspective until recently, have you noticed some of your marketer colleagues at other brands looking to pitch more regularly?
I definitely think there's a culture in the industry today, on the client side in particular, and I say this positively, but there is a culture of pitching. I think the cycle seems to be getting shorter, so therefore the people are pitching faster. And I think rather than trying to work with agencies and resolve issues, it seems to be the easy default is just to say, you know what, we've been together for X years or a long time anyway, why don't we go to pitch? So there's no doubt. I think I would say that I think there's more pitching going on than is probably necessary.
Mm. What do you think are the main drivers for this extra pitching activity?
On the client side, there's a lot of pressure coming on to budgets on every level. Mm. And unfortunately, when a procurement organisation, either internal, or a lot of companies are now hiring external agencies to come in, what they do is it's very simple. They get the expense sheet and they get the ledger, or the journal, and they have a look at it, and the number that's sitting right at the top normally, after paying for whatever materials, raw materials they need for whatever industry, normally the number one discretionary spend shows up is media. Mm. And that's why I think it gets a lot of attention.
And from an agency perspective, what sort of pressure does all of this pitching in the market place on agencies?
I always think you have to take the good and the bad. So I think with pitches, it naturally puts pressure on your teams to deliver extra work and a lot of short turnarounds. So there is that kind of pressure. There's also pressure to up your game on your current clients, because the main thing, whenever we get a pitch come in, our first thing is to go, all right, what are our current clients doing and how do we deploy extra love to them so that they don't feel at any point that they're second, because that just leads to more pitching and more of. So you've really got to make sure that you're really ramping up your love on your current clients so that they don't feel anything. The good of pitches is that I believe it helps you step change agencies. So it puts things under a microscope, and particularly from a CEO or leadership point of view, you're in it day in, day out, and you can see what might need to be changed or what you need to evolve, and that has a benefit for your current clients. So certainly the good and the bad, because honestly, otherwise, why would you pitch?
Did you think the short-term nature of what seems to be media-client relationships actually affects your ability to provide the best media planning?
I will say that we're lucky to have a lot of amazing clients. So I do have to just say, as an overall observation, though, if there were clients listening to this, I think the pitching puts fear. And that's what I think is the biggest issue right now, is that fear paralyzes people. So if you're under constant pressure and there's this hanging threat that, well, we'll pitch, or they're going to pitch, or the marketer rumored there's a pitch, all that does is the people working day in, day out on your account feel fear. Mm. So that means they might not be as innovative because they don't want to rock the boat, or it might mean that they drop the basics because they're scared something, or they're not having open and honest conversations back to you as a client, which I see our number one job is to consult back and be challenging the status quo. And if you're living in fear that they're going to pitch and that you've just got to tell them yes to everything, it does not promote a really healthy relationship that will make sure you deliver the best thinking and best media for your clients. So I do hope that the clients do realise that that element of fear, I don't believe, is good for them overall.
Mm. Do you think that it kind of, it seems as though it might be an easy option if you've got problems? I mean, every kind of client and every agency is facing huge challenges and you know, changes to what they actually have to do. And it seems like it could be an easy option to get a new partner, to get some fresh thinking, when the harder job is to look at what your strategy is and what you want to achieve.
Absolutely. I call it the Tinder effect, but I do believe we live in a world now where you swipe left, or is it right? I swear my husband, I'm not on Tinder. I got married before Tinder. But I do believe there is this short-term nature, and everything is, okay, so we're under pressure, therefore let's just swipe left. Let's look to the next one, and let's look to the next one. And you've seen that in some pitches where it's coming up to review only 18 months to 2 years after. And certainly 5 or 6 years ago, that was unheard of. A big pitch would go to market, and that relationship, certainly from my point of view, when you're looking at what clients you'll go after, you'd know that would be shored up for the next 6 years. The next 6 to 8 years.
And there's a bit more certainty and consistency.
Exactly, and now it's not. So I do certainly think there is that, you know, we're always going to look for something quicker to solve, because I do understand clients are under a lot of pressure as well.
I mean, just a bit of a slight angle maybe about the defence of the clients. I do believe part of what's driving the volume of pitching we're getting is a view of the client that they actually need to know what's going on. And the industry is going through a lot of change. There's a lot of jargon. Most of them don't really understand it in depth. And one of the ways to actually go out and explore and find out what are the different tools, what are the different approaches, how are people handling digital versus programmatic, etc. One of the best ways to educate yourself is actually to say, you know what, I'm going to throw it out to pitch, and then I'm going to see 3 or 4 different agencies give me a very, very different perspective on it. So that side of it, I think, is really healthy. And I think that's definitely what's driving it, is that people want to know what's going on and what are the capabilities of different agencies. So that's, I think, the positive side for us as well.
I think that's true. It's not always, doesn't always have to be a bad thing. And it's kind of, it's, you know, if you're a marketer and you're not thinking, actually, am I getting the right things from my agency partners? Have I got the most up-to-date kind of, you know, capabilities? If you're not thinking that, then you probably should be as well, right?
And yeah. As an agency, yeah. You should be able to defend it. Do you know what I mean? Again, you should take it as an opportunity to, sometimes when you've worked with clients for a long time, you don't get to showcase all the new things that you've been doing because you've got a longer relationship. And so it's also a great way to make sure you do that. Although if any of my clients are listening, please don't pitch. We love you all.
But what about the increasing role of procurement in media pitches? I quite often hear stories about pitches, and a media agency will say that they've won the scorecard, but the business will go elsewhere afterwards. Have you noticed a growing influence from procurement in how these processes are being run?
Yes. So, again, if I can talk maybe firsthand experience on this one. I think procurement have a really important role to play, and I'm talking internal procurement, or sometimes people are using third parties like Portland or whatever. I think they absolutely have a role to play. The thing that I guess I've becoming probably more frustrated around and quite vocal around is they should manage the process, not the decision making. Mm. And I think what we're seeing much more, is certainly our experience, is when you get towards the end of the pitch, the CMOs, and I say this really, really politely, but they almost disappear, and it ends up being a very, very you know, financially driven procurement discussion.
Mm.
And that's not always going to get the best outcome. I think they definitely should run the process, but the CMO and the marketing team at the end of the day, they have to work with that agency. They're responsible for the output. They're responsible for that managing the relationship, the strength of that relationship, and the quality of work. So I think, you know, everyone has a role to play, but let's not delegate. You know, let's make sure that the CMO is at the table and making the right decision. And look, at the end of the day, you get what you pay for.
Mm.
And I think as an industry, we can't forget that. It's like you can't go and buy a Lexus at the same price as a Mazda, or you can't get all the options for free. We are a service organization. We invest in people. We invest in technology. And that costs money. And we do it on behalf of our clients to do a better job. And I think we should be open and have adult conversations around that. And maybe we need to be more flexible in our packaging of that. And maybe there's low-cost clients who don't want all the frills, and there's more, you know, expensive clients in a way. But having it just a commercial decision, I don't think is the right way the industry should go.
Mm. Well, what have you noticed, Katie, in terms of the growing influence of procurement?
I think that the reality is that procurement play a very big role. So we have to accept that and work with it. And, you know, I've actually had some great experience with some procurement who end up being very fair and want, they know that the success of their business going forward is if the agency's healthy and they're healthy. Mm. I think the difference is, and some of the things Mark was talking to, is we all put on our best show in pitches. Of course, we're going to put our best foot forward. And sometimes the haggling over price at the end means that some of the things they saw is no longer part of their scope of work. And I'm not sure it's always communicated back to the marketing team that what they saw then got diluted into, those two streams of work are now optional, and only if we need them will you get them. So then there's, you set up to fail a little bit from the beginning, because the marketing team are like, we were so amazed and now we get all of this. And you're like, no, actually half of that got stripped out by procurement or by the final decision. And if everyone was really open and honest about that, I think it'd be an easier starting point. So it's just being really open about the communication, the contract, and what was decided to be in and out of scope.
It must be quite frustrating, though, when you go through a media pitch, you invest a lot of time and resources with the pitch, do a great job in the presentation, and then at the end of the day, it's just about price.
Oh, incredibly frustrating. But I'm going to go with the purest, naive and strategic mind that I am, which is I also think we decide to pitch. So there are times where I hear the industry complaining a lot and I think, well, we didn't have to. You know, no one held a gun. Well, actually, they sometimes... Mark has held a gun to my head. No one held a gun to my head and said, you have to pitch for this. So we make the decision. So you go in eyes open. It is incredibly frustrating when it's made on money. But I think most clients would sit there and go, it wasn't really made on money. The people that lose go, it was made on money.
Mm.
And the people that win go, no, we're getting paid a really fair amount. So I think it's one of those default answers. Again, I could be wrong. My experience is if we've lost a pitch, I don't believe it's been money. I think it's something we didn't do right. And when we've won a pitch, it certainly hasn't been that we've dropped our money down because I'm not interested in doing business on those terms. So I guess, again, I take a rather purist point of view. And if it's Pollyanna of me, I'll hold on to it because it keeps me turning up every day for more.
Yeah,
keeps you optimistic.
It does.
Look, the build I would make on that as well, which is, again, from a positive point of view, I actually think there's a bit of maturity happening as well. I've seen a turn, even in the last 2 or 3 months, and talking to some of the pitch consultants, looking at some of the wins we've had ourselves, we know we weren't the cheapest, but we won the business for all the right reasons. When I talk to procurement advisors and that, they say they're certainly trying to help educate clients that there is a cost. Agencies do need to have an income to be able to run their business effectively and hire the right people, and that the final decision should not just be about money. So I think there is a turn. I think there's a maturity in conversation happening. And I think the more we can have conversations like this where we just raise it and talk about it openly, it's not good or bad and it's not right or wrong. It's just something that we have to be aware of. There are trade-offs. And let's just have an open conversation.
Yeah, and I think, I know you mentioned this at the beginning, is something we would probably talk about, and I can't believe I'm bringing up transparency as a topic because it's so loaded. But I do think the transparency debate is also great because that should highlight if an agency's putting in something that doesn't even cover the cost of their team, then where are they getting their money from? Mm. So hopefully as well, this whole discussion and more transparency around contracts and transparency guidelines will just mean that as an industry, clients' procurement can see that there's got to be some type of fee being paid that makes sense for the business. So if it's not, then where is the agency making money?
Has all this pitching led to massive undercutting in terms of fees offered by some agencies and just a general driving down of price?
I I don't know, because again, every time you're involved in a pitch, you're told you're too expensive. So like, there's no time a procurement goes to you, hey, put your prices up, you're cheap. So you're always told you're more expensive than the market, and then you're potentially told that the other agencies have moved. Again, I can only make decisions based on mind share and my ultimate responsibility to my agency, my clients, and then Group M. So even if people are undercutting, it's not substantial. And I think that's why we've seen that Tinder effect also happening, is that whereas before you'd go in long-term relationships and you'd have built a good team and you've held your ground and you might hold the account for 6 years, 10 years, whatever, now the fact that we're seeing clients rotate after 18 months suggests that what agencies are putting forward to get that business is not sustainable, and the clients are like, wait a second, that wasn't what I signed up for. I'm going to move on. So again, you get caught out if you undercut. You just do, because you can't service the account to the level that you're expected to.
I think that's really fair. We're hearing probably more and more of that occurring. I think the other thing that we should be able to do, again, trying to have this sort of adult conversation, is we have to be better at walking away from business as well. So if it does get down to that point, we've got to believe in our people, we've got to believe in our product and our service, and generally want to produce outstanding work. And if it means that we get to a point where we have to say, you know what, we'd love to be able to do that, but we can't give you what you want at that price, we should be able to, in a very mature way, walk away as well.
Okay. Transparency is obviously a hot topic at the moment. It's been a hot topic for a while.
It probably always will be.
AANA recently released its guidelines and a contract template to try and address transparency. What was your reaction to the documents that they released?
My reaction, so I've read the guidelines, I'll be completely honest, the contract template is with my commercial director, who's going through it to give me a bit of assessment, because obviously that's his area of expertise. Look, I don't see anything wrong with it. Again, the more conversations we can have about transparency, I think the purpose of the document was, I guess, some education for some clients who maybe don't know some of those areas and want to know the conversation they should be having around it. I certainly don't think the intent is it's one size fits all. And again, I read through it and thought, yeah, these are conversations I have with our clients regularly, or I'm not afraid to have with any of them that want to have that chat. Again, I don't know what the contract template has, and I don't know the impact of that, but I do know the guidelines for me just felt like a good conversation starter, nothing that didn't seem reasonable.
What about you, Mark?
Yeah, so look, I welcome the concept of having a template, okay? I also have to keep things very simple, I like to take a step back and say, why do we have contracts in the first place? The reason we have contracts is they're actually just meant to be at the end of the process, and they're actually meant to be a written documentation of what has been agreed between two parties for what they want and at the right fee. So to me, I come back to, that's what we should do with every client. Mm. So if at the end of it, there's just a thing we call a contract, which just says, I want to be really clear with you. So we're very open about it. This is what's my expectation of you as a client, and this is what my expectation of you as a offerer of service. No problems at all. So I think it's great. We'll have the conversations. We'll absolutely work through it with our clients. But, you know, for Group M, I have to say, in all the Group M agencies, we have great contracts with all our clients already. We're more audited than anybody else. We are yet to fail an audit on a contract. We welcome any of our clients come in and audit our business and order their contracts. Because again, the contract should be a reflection of what the two parties have agreed to do. And that's what we should be getting audited against. So contracts are important, but let's remember what they are. To me, they're an output rather than the centre of a discussion.
Okay. Having a look at the contract guidance document, it highlights a whole range of questions that marketers could potentially ask agencies. Can I just ask, putting on your CMO hat, how many CMOs or marketing people out there do you think would actually think about asking these questions? Do you think there's quite a lot of marketers that would be clued up on this, or do you think this is actually providing some interesting education for...
No, so look, I think one of our roles in the industry, having come this side, is actually to simplify and educate our clients, because it is a crazy world at the moment on every level, technology, contracts, you name it, income streams, and how do agencies make money, etc. It varies by client. If the big clients, there's no surprises. Yep. The Unilevers, the Proctors, the McDonald's, they've got media buyers in their teams that are experts that have grown up and worked in the industry for years. So a lot of those clients, and we deal with them regularly, they're like, what's all this hot air and noise about? Let's get on with business, rather than being distracted by noise around transparency. I think there are some maybe smaller clients who don't necessarily have that resource, that may be going, oh, I didn't even know about that, or that's an interesting question. And great. I think, you know, as I said, our job should be to have adult-to-adult conversations with our clients. And if that helps them, I have no problems with it. I think it's a good thing.
Would you generally disclose some of this information as just a normal, usual course of drafting a contract?
Yeah, so look, I think any of our clients, I mean, it comes back to where we start. We sit down and ask them what would they like and what do they need. And even these days, and you guys know this as well, before you even get to the contract stage, when you're at the RFP stage, you're declaring all of this anyway. Mm. Now, today, in the RFPs that come through, we have to answer all those questions about transparency, about rebates, whatever. That's all done right up front before we even get into the pitch process. So again, there's been, I think, a big change in this space. And I think and I say this really politely, I think the media are probably making more noise about this and think it's more exciting.
That would be us.
No offense over there.
But the other media.
No, not you, the other media people. But it's like anything, like there's a topic that sometimes just gets attention and it sort of gets a lot of attention. Also, some of the CMOs I've spoken to, this has been going on for years and it's almost like we're a bit bored with it. Isn't there not any other issue that we can talk about as an industry? And also, can we have conversations that take the industry forward versus trying to look for scandals or issues? I mean, it's a great industry. It's full of really good people. And I think some people are just getting a bit bored with it as well.
Mm. I think that's a really interesting thing about the AANA's guidelines is that it's trying to push it forward. It's not sort of just talking around the same subject. It's actually providing, you know, or aiming to provide clients and advertisers with, here are some questions you should ask if you don't know what you should be asking about. And I think that's a really good thing. And Katie, it was interesting you said that, you know, you're not afraid to answer some of these questions because some of them are probably topics that agencies have maybe in the past not really wanted to disclose some of these things. I mean, do you think that across the market there will be some agencies that are like, I don't want to answer that. I'm not comfortable with that. And why do you think that is?
So I think there will be. And again, I will never slag my competitors because I think we work in a wonderful industry and I genuinely really do appreciate and respect a lot of the competitors that we're up against. But I do think that Group M, we've had to tackle the conversation around transparency for maybe a bit longer. So we've had to get a lot more comfortable with answering the questions anyway. And so we've done that and we're very comfortable with it. I think that clients fall into two camps and I'm, again, fortunately, I get to work with one camp in particular, but where they either want their agencies to make money and be a profitable business, or for some reason they don't think media agencies should make any money at all. And so I think if people are scared to have the transparency discussion or answer any of those questions, it's probably because they're scared that this is a client that will, you know, not want them to have a healthy business model. Again, every client wants you to do it transparently, and I'm not suggesting you should make money in any other way. But if to answer your question, why would some people be afraid to have the conversation? It could be that they're afraid that that client goes, oh, well, I don't want you making money. And there is for some reason that. And we're a service industry in the same way our clients are either service or creating product in the same way they don't.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Charge their customers cost price. They you know, pay for their consultancy or they pay for a product. We're lucky enough to have open relationships with our clients where they're paying for either the consultancy or product that we're delivering. again, they know it. They know what they're paying for.
Yeah. Mark, actually, last time we spoke, we had a very interesting conversation about this, and you sort of explained the services and products that the agencies are kind of launching and moving into, and a really interesting sort of analogy that I hadn't sort of thought of before. And you were talking about how if you're an FMCG manufacturer, you extend your product lines into different areas. And I found that a really interesting way of thinking about it that I'd not thought of before. Can you run through that?
I was going to jump in. That's great. So thanks for that opportunity. Look, and I say this again, coming into the agency, I was a bit frustrated being on the GroupM side now, because I don't think as an industry we've done a good enough job of actually educating clients what a media services organization does. In a way, by not talking about it, it's created this, it must be something naughty or they're doing something dodgy because they're not talking about it. Actually, we do some fantastic stuff. We have some proprietary media that I'm super proud of. We've got technology that we invest in that delivers amazing services and results to our clients that we make a margin on and which we're open about and we talk about. Now, if we had done that earlier and said to clients, guess what? In the old days, it was really simple. We made a commission and we got a 10% rebate from the media vendor and everybody knew, and it was 17 or 20% depending on what the contract was, and it was very simple. Today, that world doesn't exist, and I guess there's been a lot more focus down on costs, etc. I think as a media industries, if we want to keep surviving, we have to diversify, and that was the example I used. You know, Procter & Gamble, for example, had said we're a shampoo company, and all they made was shampoo, and the market moved into conditioners and face care and all that stuff. Guess what? Their business would be shrinking and they wouldn't have a business today. They didn't. They stood back and said, how do we innovate? How do we create additional revenue streams? How do we grow? We have shareholders, they have shareholders, and what we are as management of these companies are charged with is to deliver fantastic service, and through delivering fantastic service, grow our businesses. Our shareholders, and for us to invest in people and invest in more technology to help our clients, we have to deliver a margin and we have to deliver growth. So that's why I think it's a fantastic opportunity. We shouldn't be shy about it. We should openly talk about we are going to have multiple sources of revenue. Some of those will be client fee-based. Some of those will be services-based, could be consulting, it could be through analytics, it could be something else, or it could be through proprietary media products that we have developed and that we do offer our clients.
And it's always got to come, again, back to that strategic purist in me, it's always got to come from a client and their customer need. So it's never a hard sell to a client to offer them a service if they genuinely need it and it's something that's going to drive their business forward. So it's also about looking at your business and going, what do your clients need? Where are they moving? Where's their business moving? And how do we help facilitate and step change their growth? And then let's have a conversation about what products we can develop for them, as opposed to, here's a suite of things we're going to make money off. Can you buy it from us? That never works. So again, it's about having a really adult conversation about where both businesses need to go and we're being led by what they need, as opposed to necessarily just creating products for the sake of it.
Do you feel there is a disconnect between what media agencies actually do and the marketer's perception of what media agencies do?
I don't know if you want to take that for, as being a client as coming in.
I don't think so. I think clients, they probably think it's easier. What media agencies do, they probably think is easier than actually really is. I don't think, as a client, I don't think I really spent the time thinking about just how complex media planning and strategy development is today, just because of the amount of technology, the fragmentation, the amount of choices, the difference in measurement systems, etc. I think clients, as we said earlier, look, they're just under huge amounts of pressure. And I think we should be grateful as well. I think one of the things that makes media as exciting as what it is we are the front end of driving the growth of their businesses as well. It's a big spend, but they need a big return on that as well. So I think we should take that on as a huge privilege that we are helping guide and make decisions with clients to help generate growth for them. And it's the one that's under the most scrutiny.
Yeah, and I do agree. I think clients understand what media can deliver for their business. I think the one thing we probably need to do better education around is that now there's so many specialised skill sets. That actually used to be three people on your team. Now that's actually 10 people that are doing half of their role, because you don't need a full-time biddable specialist, or you don't need a full-time programmatic trader or whatever it is, but you need access to one of them. And so I think there's a hard thing for clients as well, is that they used to have a team of, say, three that knew them personally and could do the job around buying television and buying, you know, a little bit of digital really, really well. And now as it goes into more and more specialized areas, it all needs to make one whole. And so there is more people involved, but you can't find people that are going to be able to do all of those things perfectly in one. So it's just having that relationship and conversation with clients, I find, has evolved to what do their team structures look like and who are the people they are going to spend a lot of time with and engage with as the front face of the agency. And then who are all the other people behind the scenes doing stuff that they may not meet day in, day out. And I do liken that to an advertising agency when they're producing creative. They might meet the creative director, but they may not meet the production, the EP, the people that are sourcing talent, because that's all being done behind the scenes for them. And so I think we need to have a look at how our structures have evolved as well.
Mm. Do you think media agencies as well might benefit from getting more senior marketing people on board, like yourself, Mark, making the switch over?
Well, yeah, I can ask Katie that question. I'm sure Katie would prefer us not to be that. No, no, it's good. Look, I think it's one of those open switches. I think there's advantages of coming in. You've also got to know your limitations. I remember I was being interviewed for this job, and I actually said to Dominic Proctor at the time, I said, look, Dom, I'm really worried that 3 months in you're going to fire me because you're going to realize I'm not a media expert. And he goes, I've got 1,000 of those in the building. I don't need another one.
Mm.
And I think it's a balance. There's always, look, I can bring a different thought. I'm not an expert. Katie here would absolutely smash me when it comes to technical media buying strategy or the technology. What I can do is hopefully just bring a perspective around where a client's at today. Mm. I'm trying to keep very much client-focused. I've said I want to position myself as a client CEO. And when we're talking in the office or having meetings, that's really interesting, but what's in it for the client? Mm. Or how do we better serve their client? Or if the client's got to that place, maybe we haven't understood their business well enough. Have we had enough senior meetings? Have we actually been out and touched their business? So it's bringing that lens on top of what we've already great, which I think is a great business and a powerful and very talented group of people. It's just a different lens.
Yeah. And I think the other big hot topic in the industry at the moment is diversity. And obviously, Katie, you're one of a handful of female CEOs in media agencies. Obviously, recently, Amy Buchanan, OMD, promoted into the top role there. There's Virginia Highland and Wendy at M2M. But there's very few women in very senior leadership positions. Is that something that the industry is doing enough to actively change? And how do we make sure there's more of a balance in the top end of leadership?
I think what's great to start with is just the number that you did, and Mel Fine at Ensemble as well. And, you know, it was wonderful to hear about Amy the other day. I think that was really, really great. So at least we're getting more. When I was made CEO, 3.5 years ago, I was the only female, and I know it opened a bit of a can of worms. So hopefully already the industry is doing more. It is a passion topic for me, but I think that we have to look more at the fact that to address the problem of females in leadership, we need to actually address the flexibility issue of the industry. So making sure that we're creating a flexible enough workforce that women, and again, a lot of women will say that they have to take time out to have their baby if that's their choice. And again, whatever choice you make is entirely up to you, and neither choice should hold your career back in any way. But if you do talk to women, they'll say, well, I take a year off, so that puts me back a year. Or I'll come back and I'll want to do less days, etc. So it's about how do you create an industry that's flexible enough to encourage women back into the workforce if they've taken some time off to have a child, and how do you facilitate them being able to do both things well? And equally for working dads, the same thing should be afforded to them. I think the issue we have as well is that there was a long period of time there where there weren't any women in the top at all. And so you're seeing the lag effect of the women that came through my generation jumping out too early, going, this industry is not right for me. I can't have a life. I can't have a partner. I can't have a child. I want. So rather than slog it out in what's a rather energized and hectic industry, I'm going to leave and go and do something else. And so hopefully now, as they've got more and more females taking leadership roles, hopefully we're seeing more and more girls coming through going, and I shouldn't say girls in a patronizing way, I just mean being younger women coming through saying, cool, that is totally possible.
It's doable. You can kind of see that sort of role model ahead of you.
Exactly right.
Because I know that Group M has done some stuff at kind of a top level sort of a year or 18 months ago. There was a few sort of initiatives sort of coming in to actually, change that into action and not just talk about it. So, I mean, are you seeing those things have an impact already on the kind of, on the workforce?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. For us, I think as well, it's kept people in that may not even be having a child right now in the agency group because they know that benefit will play out for them. But absolutely, I know Steady and now Mark, we've got champions of females and diversity in our business, and we can see that coming through.
Yeah, and I think the I couldn't agree with Katie more. To me, it's about total diversity, not just about gender. And I think it's about us being willing, and certainly we're trying to do that at Group M, to just have the conversation again. So we've got people, I think we've actually got quite a lot of female people in senior roles, may not be at CEO levels, but they're certainly on the excos, they're certainly on the senior leadership team. So they're at the, you know, the top of the senior management teams in the organisations, and they need flexibility as well. So some of them don't come in until 10 o'clock in the morning. We're very clear on which nights they need to go home. Even in our own CEO meetings, we sit down and have an open conversation and go, what do you need and what nights would it not make sense for us to have meetings? Or if we're going to organise a dinner, for Katie, for example, it would be, please don't do that on a Thursday night because I've got, that's the night that I need to pick up. So we, I think you just have to have the conversation and demonstrate, as Katie said, that we're genuine about wanting, and for me, it's about everybody's life. You know, I don't believe in work-life balance. I believe in people being empowered enough to actually manage their life and do what they need to do. And if that means they have to drop kids off, if it means, you know, I go sailing on a Thursday afternoon, it's in my diary. It's actually part of my self-care. It's part of my management of my life. And I think everybody should take that on.
We worked with She Says, the kind of networking organisation earlier this year, and they ran a survey getting sort of feedback from the creative industry and women in sort of creative positions. And some of the real stories that that people have been through and been exposed to very recently, I mean, some of it reads like you're still in the 50s, and it's kind of, you know, it makes the blood boil, and it makes you kind of embarrassed for the industry that these things are still a reality.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, fairly broadly. And I think it's just good for it to be top of mind for everyone to be addressing it, I think, because while there's, you know, there's success stories and there's great issues of great examples of it improving, there's still a lot to
Yeah, let's not pretend it's fixed, because also the stats are proving it's not fixed. Because even just outside of media, which does really well in terms of female in leading roles, already you can see there are not enough women on board. So, yeah, let's not pretend it's fixed, and let's keep talking about how we address it, not just the issue, but how do we make it better.
So they're two fairly big topics, and we're sort of coming close to wrapping up. What do you think next year are going to be the big topics that keep the industry busy and hit the headlines?
For me, I think there'll be a couple that would be important to us. I still think there's one around talent. The industry's got a huge shortage, and I find it a bit of a disconnect because there's a lot of vacancies and yet there's a lot of really intelligent graduates out there that are unemployed. So we've got to find this disconnect about actually how do we fill the roles, because there's a lot of opportunity in the industry. So I think there's an opportunity for us to get better at promoting the industry and actually bringing people in, because at the end of the day, it's not just the media industry. You're actually entering the communication industry, and you can have a fantastic career. And we all know these days no career is linear, and it's about different experiences and picking up skills. So to me, that will be one. And the other one's still going to be around technology and the drive into technology, addressable TV, programmatic, going on television at the scale that we'll need to make. And the last one I think that the industry really is has to tackle is going to be measurement. And that's across every level. You know, we've heard about not marking your own homework. We've heard about all the different measurements. I think the industry just needs to step up and say, why do we measure? We measure to be accountable and actually be able to, as an industry, we want to know how effective a combined plan is, not one channel versus another. They don't happen anymore. We're doing very complex plans. We should have access to independent data that enables us as an industry to keep demonstrating to clients that it's working and they're getting a return on investment. And guess what? They'll spend more money and we'll drive more growth. So let's grow up and have the conversation versus having, you know, what I think pretty fragmented conversations around measurement.
What are your hot issues for 2017?
Well, I couldn't agree more around the talent, technology and measurement. So absolutely. One that I'll throw into the mix from a client point of view is I think there'll be a tipping point between, and I've said it before and on Ad News panel as well, but between balancing brand fame and direct response, ROI. So I feel like we've been able to get so pithy and so targeted with our audiences that it's also been really easy to put a lot of money into that final click or into the place that we know is driving a dollar for dollar or even more in the media choices. And again, conversion plays a really big role, obviously, but there has to be education around the fact that consideration and awareness and brands actually standing for something in popular culture is going to be a big push into driving conversion. And you don't always see that payback in the dollar. You see it as a long term. So what I'm trying to say there, I think, is that the balance of short and long term data and actually being able to interrogate those and make decisions that have longevity for a brand, that is going to be a key point for clients, because I think a few have swung a little bit too far and are now starting to go, wow, my awareness and brand health measures are eroding really, really quickly. Yeah. And oh, ultimately, after 18 months of doing this one thing, I'm now seeing that my conversion numbers are also starting to drop. So there's only so much you can do.
It's a tactics versus brand building.
Absolutely. And both play a role. And, you know, again, I get it, at a boardroom table, the marketer has to go, this money, this $3 million you're investing is going to pay back this, to potentially people that don't understand, like to their, some of their stakeholders who may not be from marketing or from our world. I totally understand the conundrum they're in, but equally they have a responsibility to their brands long after the next 6 months. And how are you going to make sure that your brand has health well into the next 2 years?
Yeah, I think it's a great challenge. Having lived through it multiple times, I think the marketing guys, you know, and all the CMOs out there, we need to have faith again in the profession and what we do, and be really good at strategy, and have those strategies executed over a period of time. I know when I was at McDonald's, the day we stopped doing short-term tactics and we got the business focused around long-term strategies, focusing on truly addressing consumer tensions and investing in platforms over time, and generally trying to say, guys, we want to deliver sustained growth, the business turned. Yeah, and for 2.5-3 years now later, they're still delivering consistent growth week in, week out, because it's not short term anymore. They're generally investing in brands, they're investing in platforms, and they're doing things that the consumer notices, yeah, and it's invested in over time. And there's some great stats about you need at least 6 months in market, and you can't judge something on 2 or 3 weeks. It's got to be what's the impact over 6 months or more. But you've got to be bloody brave to be able to stand up and confident in yourself and in your team, and talk to the CEOs and talk to your boards and go, I know this is what you want me to do, but I'm actually here to do the right thing, and this is what I need to do for you. Let's go down that journey together, have an open conversation about it. And even if you just buy a year and say, guys, we've been doing this and it hasn't worked, let's just try this for a year, and at the end of the year let's look at each other again and go, maybe it didn't work. But give the CMOs the space to get a year out before we're cutting stuff off.
You need a trusting CEO who kind of buys into brand and marketing.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, the brilliant thing about media is we can optimize in real time anyway. So once it's in market, you can optimize absolute hell out of something. Conversely, I will say that's why transparency conversation is really important too, because every client needs to trust the recommendations their media agencies are making is for the benefit of their brand, and the channels that we're recommending are so we can see their business and their brand grow, when they may not always see the payback tomorrow because we're recommending doing something that's about a brand builder. And therefore, again, why I encourage the transparency debate, because if that neutralizes and means you trust our decision, bring it on, and we can all get to creating great work.
But how realistic is that when you consider that CMO tenures are getting shorter? And there's so few CMOs at board level. So you're sort of up against this cultural challenge in the C-suite and above, where they probably don't understand marketing the way it should be understood. So how do you actually get around those issues, and what role can media agencies play to help CMOs?
So I think there's a lot we can do. But it does come back to conviction. It does come back to the CMO also being able to have that conversation with the CEOs, and they're not easy. I can tell. I've done it in Unilever, I've done it at McDonald's, I've done it in Pepsi. I think you can galvanize, and you don't need the whole board behind you. You just need one or two people who are happy to be your support. And one of the ways to do it is actually break the business the old way, okay, and then demonstrate. Yeah, and I actually did that at McDonald's. We got to the point at McDonald's that literally we nearly broke the business. Okay, we're doing so many launches and so many short-term tactics that actually the operators from the restaurants were calling up saying, can you please stop? You're killing us. It's like, oh, good. I've got to the breaking point. Now let's change strategy. So I do think you also have to be a bit creative. I've had discussions with very, very senior regional presidents about a change in strategy and being able to demonstrate to them that this is what we've done for 3 years. And if we don't change, this is what's going to happen. Here's a new strategy that is going to be different. I need 12 to 18 months air cover before it's going to bite, and this is what's going to happen. but in 18 months we'll be in a much better position than what we are by not doing this. Will you buy me that air cover? Will you come on that journey? And I've done it. I've done it probably half a dozen times now in companies, and it always pays off. But you can't, you've got to have that conversation. If you don't have that conversation with your CEO and he's just looking for short-term results, and they're under huge pressure as well, but don't forget, they've got longer tenure, okay? So he can't hire behind firing three or four CMOs in his tenure. He generally needs to just demonstrate value creation for shareholders and sustained growth anyway. But it's not easy. But I do think we have to help.
Because I think from a media point of view, obviously we're further removed then from, you know, Mark being a CMO where he can actually rally it and make it happen. And the value, the way we can help the CMOs with that is also test and learn. So you know what, if your board are really pushing back or your stakeholders really don't buy into this, let's test and learn in a market. Let's change the strategy entirely there, and we'll use control markets to figure out what's happened and start giving you case study. Secondly, there are always case studies. Prove, you know, not necessarily case studies to prove the innovation thing in market is going to be, you know, when you've been asked to do the most innovative thing but prove it's worked. That doesn't always happen. But when it comes to something like making strategic business decisions on balancing brand health with fast returning channels, there's always precedent set. So global case studies and then a test and learn in a market is an easier way to get their stakeholders across the line.
And if that fails, just hire Mark Ritson and get him to come to a board meeting.
Yeah, exactly. get him to explain it to them.
Yeah, do a deal with Mark.
So thank you so much for both coming in today.
Awesome.
No, thanks. It's been a pleasure.
Today's Ad News podcast is being produced by the good folk at Nova Entertainment, including executive producer Andy Milne and sound engineer Shelley Klum.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.